The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in. We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada. The day, lovely, gorgeous, just absolutely majestic, downtown Las Vegas. Still to come this hour, we'll talk to our own Mike Somich, co-host of The Handle. He does it with a Matt Brown. Have you heard of that guy before? Matt Brown.
Yeah, once or twice.
Okay. They do The Handle on the weekends here at VSiN. Somich will be by to talk college hoops with us. We still have to talk NBA because these award markets need to be talked about. This gentleman, let's put it this way. Less than 10 seconds after Tommy Lloyd in Arizona was knocked out of the NCAA tournament, I texted him, and he responded by saying, minus 1,000, I would get this text. It's Matt Cox from Three Man Weave, everybody. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Matty?
I'm swell, probably better than Tommy Lloyd right now and his PR team, especially with the Matt Painters of the world getting off the tournament hot seat,
yes,
so to speak. So, yeah, a winner for you and another winner, sort of, with the Alabama advancement. I'm not sure if you've been beating your chest on the show. I haven't listened today, but happy for you.
Quite the opposite.
Your reward is, your reward is Connecticut. Yeah, so that's tough.
I'm not a hedger by nature anyway. So it wasn't like I was looking ahead, you know, not that you can't hedge it right now. Not that I was even looking to do so. I
mean, but the option would be nice.
But to have the option might be nice. That's right. And the option theoretically, not theoretically, but would, I guess I should say theoretically, would exist for the championship game, but maybe not if they played Purdue. Maybe it wouldn't exist for that either. I started the show by saying, betting aside, if the NCAA committee and the networks primarily could have handpicked four teams with four narratives, I don't think they could have done better than this. Do you?
No, you're right. The NC State thing is just a quintessential Cinderella story, other than the fact that they are from a Power Six school. So maybe if you could just put them in like a low major, they kind of check all the boxes, just the run they've been on, right? And the DJ Burns likability factor. Purdue, absolutely slam dunk. UConn, the dominant juggernaut force. And then, yeah, Alabama is the black sheep, right? All the other three teams play throwback, you know, 90s NBA basketball through the post, inside out, and Bama's going to come out with a different, I saw someone posted the Four Dragons meme, and everyone was kind of going back and forth, like, well, is the outlier Goofy Dragons at Alabama because of how they play, or is it just NC State because they're, well, you know, NC State and ranked just outside the top 40 in most of these metrics.
Yeah, who's the black sheep? All right, so by the way, as I say that again, I must apologize, with apologies to Houston, who had the Jamal Shedd injury, and I just feel like they just got I feel so bad for them because it's just
we all watched that game live. Actually, we were over at Circa, and everyone just went right to their phones immediately. Live bet.
Oh, dude,
and it just felt so slimy. I felt like it was just blood money. It's like, and it just feels so wrong as I hit confirm, and that was inevitable.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had forgotten about that. So 7.5 was out there. I wasn't quick enough to get to 7.5. I got a 6.5. I got a 5.5. And then about a minute later, I bet Duke money line at a very low money line plus price, but still a money line nonetheless.
Okay, right.
But it was just, I didn't feel slimy at all. I did. I know what you mean. I felt a little slimy, but then in the end, you don't feel slimy because how many things go against you in sports betting. But it was just, you know, Kelvin Sampson said, he goes, there's, I guess, even on the halftime show, let's take him out of it because he'd be biased. But I can't remember who it was who said, Jay Wright. He said, there is nobody more important to his team in college basketball than Shedd is to Houston. Hyperbole or pretty accurate?
No, I think I was going to look at the numbers like, you know, like versus Edie for Purdue, for example. I mean, you could argue he's probably a little bit more important, what Shedd means defensively too, you know, cut the head off of the snake type of thing. But then offensively you saw, and I was kind of giving Sampson some critique. I was like, they got to do something different. Like, it was just sort of like, well, our star player is gone and we're going to try and muck it up and hope we can score by playing volleyball at the rim, but there's no alterations there. But yeah, you could see without him on offense, they were almost more lost than how much they missed him defensively.
All right. So let's start with these two games on Saturday, NC State, Purdue, 9-point favorites, total 146.5. Beyond giving your thoughts on either of those, how do you think this goes given the Zach Edey foul conundrum that everybody saw in its full glory yesterday.
It's again, the whistle can go both ways here, right? I hope they have the Edey versus Burns matchup, right? I hope Painter and Keats get in the back alley and agree that they're going to put those guys on each other, so the world can get what we want to see with that. I wonder how the whistle will play out. What I've noticed in some of my research looking at some of these referee foul tendencies, the deeper you go, the less fouls they tend to call. Some of the older refs, more established refs, just don't call as many fouls. But Edey's been kind of an exception. I'd also argue that he just is actually fouled almost every time down. It's, we have college refs who aren't that good, right? Calling, officiating Shaq, and you know, the NBA officials can officiate Shaq.
Yeah.
So it's like they have no chance. So, I mean, if you're mad because they don't call anything, if you're mad because they call too much, like, well, if you're just sort of wishful thinking there. I think the whistle will probably come back down to normal, just given all the scrutiny that's been on it. But he will still command a pretty heavy whistle with just the sheer force that he is. NC State has enough bodies. I think they can kind of play the foul game. They can use up 5-10 fouls with those bench pieces and try and keep Burns out of foul trouble, which was basically the only reason Duke was up in that game first half. Right, Burns sits, Duke gets that big lead, they put him in second half, and Duke has no answer. A team that's played NC State twice, that's what's scary, right? Is the team that's played it twice had no response. John Shire, make an adjustment, please. But obviously, Zach Edey, DJ Burns will have a much harder time scoring over him, and we'll see how that plays out. I do like Purdue. I've been against NC State the last two games, so I'll probably get burned a third time. But there is some data to kind of point to the fact that that some of these teams that are double digit seeds send run out of steam in the spread range of like 5 to 10. Now I did see there's a post. There's only been four times a favorite of 11 or more has made the final four four times a favorite was laying 11 or more in the final four. All four of those did not cover, which kind of goes to the direction of Alabama, which we'll get to in a second, but there is some data to kind of back up that Alabama versus UConn might actually be too big. But this one in that kind of 8 to 9 range, we'll see where the number moves. I do like Purdue here.
Boy, it's tough. It's tough to get in front of it's tough to lay points like that against this Wolfpack team.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, that Purdue Tennessee game was weird for another reason yesterday. Not just the, you know, people are going to seize on 33 free throw attempts versus 11, which I pointed out earlier. Yeah, it's 22, and that is a little more than normal, but Purdue does tend to get the free throw advantage. A couple things. One, you brought up the Shaq thing, which I'm glad you did. For those who don't remember, like, Shaq created this problem for officials, right? There was never someone that big and strong that you had to make an assessment. Okay, did that guy just get knocked down because Shaq is just that big and strong that it's almost not his fault, right? Like, it created this weird assessment you had to make. I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place, but that Purdue-Tennessee game was weird for one other reason. There were six different spurts in that game of 7-0 or greater runs. Purdue had a 7-0 early, take it from 17-12 deficit to 19-17. Tennessee then had a 9-0 to go from 23-21 to 32-21. Purdue then had an immediate 13-0 run. Later, Purdue had a 7-0 run. Tennessee had an immediate 7-0 run after that. Purdue had a 7-0 run later to take the big lead at the end, which was the one that really mattered. Ultimately, that was a little weird. Did that concern you at all about Purdue?
It does. And Purdue's guards concern me because they were very timid. They really shrunk from the moment when it was like, it really felt like Zach Edey was the only hope they had to score. I mean, even like late in the final 30 seconds, final minute, it was like, hey, Zach Edey, can you also come help us break this press and catch the ball and make free throws? Because, you know, Lawyer and Smith had just missed a few.
Right.
And so I don't like that as their confidence momentum heading into this game. So I do have some concerns with that there. But this spurtability, I guess, does open up some live betting opportunities. The other game, I think Bama UConn has some major live betting opportunities with the spurtability of Bama. Now you could argue that could be a one-way spurt the entire way. But I do think that those runs could make Purdue vulnerable if those guards continue to kind of, you know, play a little more timid, hesitate to shoot shots they should shoot, and be overly reliant on Edey. I mean, Purdue's at their best when they have balance. I know Edey was dominant, but I do think their highest ceiling is when he is more like 25 to 12 range and the rest of the guys are making their shots, not when it's Edey going for 40 and 20 and the rest of the guys are sort of like, I don't know.
What about Bama and UConn? That's the nightcap. UConn favored by 11.5, 161.5 the total.
Yeah, you can break this game down a million ways. The angle here is how good Donovan Klingon's been at the rim, and how reliant Bama is scoring at the rim, as well as behind the three-point arc. But they do always supplement their threes with layups, right? They don't take anything in the mid-range. I think Nate Oates is going to have to throw a curveball here. I think he's a good coach. I think you look at what happened against Illinois when Brett Underwood was stubbornly just throwing everyone at the rim against Klingon, and Klingon was just promptly swiping it into the stands. I think you're going to see some willingness to take some mid-range jump shots that's outside their general shot diet. And I do think you'll see Bama actually kind of find ways to score that are creative or unlike how they've scored in the past, because UConn's just such a different beast. You can't just bring your game and show up there. You have to throw some curveballs. And I think Oates is a good enough coach. Now, was that going to be good enough? We'll see. Defensively, that's the concern. But those Bama bigs, man, they're not big, but they are athletic and they are long. They are active. Can they get enough activity on the glass to keep the possession tug of war in check? Again, Gil, I'm stubbornly back right here. 12 is a big number. I know every number we've said that all tournament against Connecticut seem big. This one does feel especially big, given they can, you know, neutralize that margin with a hot shooting performance.
How many threes do the Crimson Tide have to hit to win this
40.
Game?
40. It'll take 40. I think anything less than 15. If you're under 15, you're in trouble.
You got to be
in the 15 range.
Yeah, yesterday I was joking. I was saying they got to go like 15 of 16 from three. Like some
right.
it has to be. So I mean, it doesn't have to be out of 16, but they got to hit a ridiculous number of threes to have a shot at winning this game. Beyond covering, of course, should be awesome.
Right.
Matt, appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate you, fellas. Good luck to you.
Matt Cox, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line at 3MW_CBB for all three-man weave stuff. Coming back with the NBA.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN website is looking sharp. It's the new VSiN.com. Fresh look, enhanced navigation, mobile-first focus, improved functionality, and expanded educational content. And today's website... front page. Women's college hoops tonight. Oh, these games are great tonight, as we discussed earlier. Projections and best bets from the T-Shoe Index. Tyler Shoemaker was on the show on Friday, Kelly. You missed Tyler Shoemaker.
I did.
Michael Lombardi has an article on drafting quarterbacks. Drafting quarterbacks is risky business. That's what that's called. Adam Burke, the basics of betting baseball. Mike Somich with advanced MLB betting strategies. It's all at VSiN.com. Check it out. Gil Alexander, tennis winner again. First on clay. 1-0 documented on clay.
Nice. Quit now. Perfect season.
Jaume Munar. Full name, Jaume Antoni Munar Clar. Wins it in straight sets against Luca Van Ash. That in Marrakesh, Morocco. Over 26 years.
Was that four or five names you just rattled?
That was four.
Four, okay.
Jaume Antoni Munar Clar.
I thought I heard five at first. Like, you know, you normally hear five.
No, even Holger Vitus Natskov Rune is four.
I forgot about Rune. Yeah.
Yeah, it's four. They flashed up the baseball bets here on the side, so I just wanted to bring up my baseball bets, I guess, because I'm just a dog reacting to what I see in front of me.
Yeah, it's on the run now.
Giants start out the year 2-2, split the series with the Padres, so about what I expected from that series. I have the Padres over, Giants every which way, make playoffs. I really like this Giants team. And this Jung-Hoo Lee, who's their leadoff hitter. If there is a prop for like best, you know, winning a batting title, he might be a guy to consider for sure.
Interesting. Okay.
O'Neal Cruz, solid, 101 at MVP. Cubbies. How did the Cubbies start there?
I was going to say, did you watch much? I watched
a lot of Giants baseball. Yeah,
watched a couple innings of the Dodgers game last night after like. Like, man, the day yesterday was so great with sports. And then it even rolled into the NBA. College basketball, the golf, and then even the NBA was awesome. That Thunder-Knicks game was crazy down the stretch. SGA hits game-winning shot. We'll get to where his MVP odds have moved to.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And then it was like the NBA just, like, stopped. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll throw a baseball game on. Okay.
I mean, here's the by the way, Cubs 1-2 to start the year. It's funny when you have this March-April bet. So you asked me, did I watch baseball? Oh, yeah, I watch baseball. Everything the Giants do and everything the Guardians do. Like, I'm so locked into Cleveland Guardians baseball. I have them 65-1 most wins March-April.
So that is most wins by the end of April?
Correct.
Okay.
right now.
It's a great market.
Right now, the leaders in the clubhouse, Guardians 3-1 to start the season. Could have been 4-0, but they gacked it against the A's yesterday. But the leaders right now in the clubhouse are the New York Yankees and the Pittsburgh Pirates, both 4-0. The Dodgers are 4 wins too, 4-2, but they have the 2 losses, having played 2 extra games. Here's the way too early, less than 5% of the season, even in the books, reactions to baseball. One, the Dodgers are every bit as good as you think they are. If you bet against them, and I had 2 Cardinals in play bets yesterday at plus money, and they were up 4-0. And every time you bet against the Dodgers, it really does feel like a ticking time bomb. You're like, please game end before they can get there. And last night they didn't.
All I could think, I watched those last 2 innings. I was like, yep, I think the old Kelly Bidlin MLB live betting strategy is back this year. Just bet the Dodgers whenever they're down.
Well, my thing is, if the A's take a lead against you, bet the other team.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too, yep.
You could get Cleveland. Now, didn't get home with Cleveland yesterday, but they were, as soon as they went down 2-0, they were plus 188, which I would argue was a great bet, you know, even though it didn't get there. So what's your real quick takeaways? The Dodgers are great, despite the fact that they lost 2 games. Shohei might be a little rattled early in the season by this gambling stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Might be. The Yankees are the other headline. They're 4-0, and they won 4 at Houston, and they won 4 at Houston in pretty impressive fashion.
Soto was also trailing
yesterday. They had to preserve a lead, gave it up, and then still won. Soto has been amazing. I don't know if you know about this Juan Soto guy, but he's got a big future in Washington. Oh, what, that he's gone, is what you're saying?
How's he only 25?
He's 13. Yeah. So the Yankees have been really good, and the Dodgers and the Yankees are really good, and the A's and the Rockies really, really are bad, even though each one of them has won one. So, I mean, and the White Sox are bad. It's the haves and the have-nots. Those sides of things are exactly so far what we thought them to be.
Juan Soto's starting to remind me of Brandon Cooks, of like the joke always of Brandon Cooks, like great player, but he just kept getting traded somehow always to a better team.
Brandon Cooks has played for how many teams now? It's incredible. All right, NBA. I was joking about the April Fool's thing earlier, but I'm starting to get really mad.
Yeah, me too.
Within the category of like betting mad. Here's the thing. When we talk about football awards, right? And we did all year long. We can have actual discussions about, oh, I think Brock Purdy should be the MVP. Oh, I think Lamar Jackson should be the MVP. And you kind of understand what one person is saying and what the other person is saying. Oh, no, but if you look at the analytics, this. Or take the comeback player of the year, maybe the better example, right? Those who thought DeMar Hamlin would be the comeback player of the year, they had their reasoning. He almost died on the field. Those who thought it was somebody else should be, you know, it should be adjudicated on the field itself. You understand the reasoning. Baseball, same thing. Strider versus Snell. If these advanced stats manifest on both of them, Strider is clearly the better pitcher. They never did manifest. But people understand what the other side's argument is, even if they, you know, one side ends up being correct in the end and the other isn't. Not the case in the NBA. This is driving me up the wall. Victor Wembanyama is now what, minus 11-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year now?
He's
drifting?
Hanging around double digits, yep.
Okay. Let me just, here we go. I've been doing this for 2 months now, and y'all thought I was crazy when I first started doing it. Blocks this season. Victor Wembanyama has 226 blocks this season. Do you know what the last 3 defensive players of the year combined had in blocks? 252. That's the last 3 defensive player of the years combined, 252 blocks. Wembanyama has 226 right now. The most stocks. It's the new clever way of saying steals plus blocks in the NBA. The most stocks by a rookie in a season in the NBA. David Robinson had 457. Manute Bol had 425. Shaq, 346. Hakeem, 319. Wembanyama, 311. Might be able to pass Hakeem and Shaq and get in the 3rd place on that. Most stocks by a rookie in a season. We already talked about many times when he's on the court versus when he's off the court. And yet Rudy Gobert is even a stronger favorite now with every night. Wembanyama, first of all, he had the 40-20, and I get it, it's not defense. But last night, filled up the defensive stat sheet again.
Yeah,
I mean, 20 is still a bunch of rebounds.
It's very much comeback player of the year. It is complete polar opposite cases, and it's just.
But what's the opposite argument that he plays, that Rudy Gobert plays for the best defensive team? Yeah, but he's not even like their best defensive player. When you take him off, nothing happens.
Yeah, but because they have good players behind. On off is tricky. On off is tricky. When you're on a team as bad as the San Antonio Spurs, your on off numbers are going to look even better than they would because of how bad they are. And Minnesota, it's Minnesota the same thing. The drop off from Wemby to the next guys is massive.
Look at my face.
It's massive.
I don't mind
your bet. I've never argued with the bet. Okay, the bet. What you're betting on though is for something, for a guy to win the award, who's never that has never really been the guy who wins this award. That's all I'm saying.
I just said that we just went through the total number of blocks of the last three defensive players of the year.
It's insane.
And Wembanyama's.
Yeah.
But he's not the defensive player. The
team defense has always mattered in this award. I know, man. I got you. It's not like I've made a bet in this market ever this year, partially because of this.
How about Shea?
I would not be shocked if he wins the award and there is more national media talking about it, at least now, than there was a couple months ago. To your point, there wasn't anybody talking about it when you first brought it up. Now there's national media guys at least bringing up the fact that his stats are absurd.
That's right. They wouldn't even have the conversation with
him. Yes.
And now you hear everybody talking about it. But I'll say it again. Next year, when the Spurs aren't that much better than they are this year, no one's going to talk about how bad the Spurs are. And he's not only going to win Defensive Player of the Year next year, he's going to win it for the next 10 years in a row. It's ridiculous. Everyone's going to forget about the Spurs are bad argument. Anyway.
I can't wait to see what he opens up with at MVP next year.
Minus put a number in front of 75-0.
No, I'm a screw defensive player there. I'm talking MVP.
Oh, yeah, he'll win MVP.
MVP, I think he's going to open, I don't know, 15-1, something like that.
He's going to win multiple MVPs in his career. But
it's
he's going to win 10 defensive player of the year. Shea Gilgeous falling way down in MVP, I have no problem with because he just stopped scoring 30s a game. He scored like one 30-point game in his last seven,
yeah,
I think.
He's playing through an injury right now. I don't know if he still deserves. He still doesn't deserve to be 20-1. That's absurd. Jokic minus 700. The big change in this market. Luka up to 5-1. After a bunch of Mavericks win and him keeps putting up big numbers, this was the path. Mavs got to keep winning. Got to get that 4 seed probably.
Luka 47-12-7 last night. Mavericks win their 7th straight. You think he'll win it over Jokic though?
He could. He could make this tight if the Mavs keep winning here.
Mike Somich on College Hoops. Kelly's final NBA thoughts on the other side. Mike's got hockey picks too. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Maracana, the barrage here at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Matthew Mayberry. I went Red Sox first to 10 wins. Kind of the same theory as your Guardians bet, Gil. They started with the Mariners, and now they get the A's for 3, Angels for 3, Orioles for 3, and Angels again for 3 more. I thought 40-1 was a good number with that schedule. Well conceived. Stringfellow Hawk, my first hedge. Learned so much from the network and having so much fun here in North Carolina where they just legalized. And Stringfellow had a futures bet of sorts. I can't like pick up the PDF, but he had a bet on Tennessee, I think, to get to the Final Four, and then he hedged out with Purdue. Prime time. I personally watched 3'8" Corey Pavin shoot a 26. I'll check on that. I'll check and see if that's accurate. 3'6" Corey Pavin shoot a 26 on his front nine in the Greater Milwaukee Open in the mid-90s. As Rudy T said, never underestimate the heart of a little person golfer. Let's check on that if that's what Rudy T actually said.
That was a story I shared with you of Toasty from last summer and him getting suspended during a tournament.
Yes.
It is. If you guys don't know about it, you got to look up this dude. He is wild.
We were talking about Alejandro Toasty. That was the inspiration for that tweet. 5'6" from Argentina.
Arguing with Finau over the weekend about whose turn it is. He got suspended on the Korn Ferry Tour in the middle of a tournament last year because of the antics he was pulling. Yelling at players. Just yelling at guys for playing too slow. Cursing them out.
Tell me a dude didn't grow up at a country club without telling me a dude didn't grow up at a country club. NC95 Gambler. Perfect example with your Bama future. You should not place a future thinking you can hedge it later. Just ride it unless it's life-changing money, as I've said many times. You know what my favorite tweets are? The ones that regurgitate back what I've said to them. Over and over, it's my favorite. Jason H11. Okay, Gilly, would you trade a Masters ticket for one day, practice round or tournament day, for the name of the sushi place? The name would not be allowed to be shared. Oh, interesting. Are you offering?
He wouldn't trust you.
Jimmy Lopez.
Wouldn't trust anybody.
Jimmy Lopez, who's the black sheep? What's the black sheep? And Russell Ambrose, biased Vols fan here, would like to see the officiating on Edie be different. Edie is allowed to be very aggressive on the post-up and calling fouls there as well as the fouls on the shot. He might have voiced this. Would like to see one it be one way or other being the more dominant foul call.
Yeah, once again, I'm going to need you guys to use perfect grammar everything when you tweet in to kill.
Yeah. And Sean and Casey got on Munar in game. Plus 263. Thanks for the pick. You got it, bro.
Oh, I'm so glad you just used a very specific word because I got two more commercials to add to the list. Your janky phone to your kid commercial, that can go on the list. That one has gotten real old real quick.
Oh, the annoying commercials.
Annoying commercials. And then that Chipotle one with the chicken, where the guy calls it like fire chicken or something, and it's like the most boring description of chicken ever, using the word fire.
We'll read more tweets, but Mike Somich joins us, ladies and gentlemen, co-host of The Handle, which he does with the great Matt Brown each and every weekend here at the network, courtesy of the Progressive guest line, Samo bombing all of us with his son. Let me try that again. Samo bombing. No, nothing. There we go.
There it is.
Just see if we get better at that. Mike, how you doing, man? How's your tournament going?
I am doing well. I'm not sure if I can handle this Chipotle slander from Kelly, though. So we might have to talk about that one. Tournament's been good for me. I had two futures yesterday. I had Duke to make the Final Four, had Tennessee to make the Final Four. Both of those went up in flames, but was able to at least monetize both of them. Liked NC State quite a bit in that game, so I had a big NC State bet. And then took advantage of being able to go the other way with Purdue when they were down 11, actually. So be able to pick up Purdue +5.5. Had two middles, could have been in a phenomenal day if we could have middled both those games, but still a very good day. And I think we've got a really interesting Final Four here. I still see matchups for UConn where they could lose both of these games. I'm not saying they're going to, but there is a path for them to lose both of them. You know, I know you've got this nice future on Alabama, Gil. You just need them to shoot the lights out. Alabama at least is a high variance team. They're going to take 40 to 50 threes in this game. Let's say they get hot. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the ways you can actually beat this UConn team. And then on the other side, you've got big men on the inside that can create a problem for a team like UConn. So at least it's not completely written in stone in my mind that UConn's going to win it all.
You get me fired up, Mike. Stop getting me fired up. I don't want to get excited. Okay, let's go through it. So you just gave the Alabama path. And I think everybody agrees with that. Where it's, by the way, I think Nate Oates is one of the best coaches in college basketball. I really do. And I think that is absolutely the path. Just three them to death and pray that you hit enough of them where you can compete. What's the path for either NC State or Purdue if UConn advances to the final?
Well, what you need is a first half from UConn like they played against Illinois. And you need them to be off their game a little bit, and you have to take advantage of it. When I was sitting watching that game and we see UConn playing one of the worst halves that I've seen them play all season, and they're sitting there at 23-23. You just felt that run was coming from UConn at some point. You knew that they were going to make the push. You've got to take advantage of it when UConn is playing like that. They went into the half up 28-23 and started the second half on a 23-0 run, and the rest is history, right? You have to be up 5-10 points and put the pressure on this UConn team. And, you know, what we saw yesterday from Purdue, everyone's talking about the whistle, and I agree. That was a tough whistle for Tennessee. We knew that was going to be a big part of that game. it's hard for these guys to officiate Edie because they don't have a lot of people like Edie who are in that game. So if it is Purdue, it's can you bang inside? Can you cause trouble, create foul trouble for the bigs inside against for UConn? And then are they hitting their threes? Because at some point you start doubling Edie, he's going to kick it out. They've got to knock down those three-point shots. That's Purdue's route. NC State's route's interesting. They just need to essentially have a bad area or bad game and just smother UConn on a defensive side. UConn's so efficient offensively, but they do play a little slow, which means that if you can shoot well and you can smother them defensively, you do have a shot against them. That's what NC State did to Duke yesterday. They didn't shoot well, but they were able to smother them defensively and really guard the three-point line. Outside of McCain, no one made a three in that game for them. So they both of those teams on the other side have a path. I'm not saying it's likely to happen, but I do think it's the toughest matchups that UConn is going to have in this tournament. I thought they kind of got a little bit of a coasty regional there, especially against Illinois in the last one, which I wasn't very high on. So we'll see what they can do here in the Final Four. At least there's some intrigue to me still on how whether or not they can win it all.
Yeah, I would go with that. And NC State is everything that this tournament is about. Let me start with the games in, you know, in their order of play on Saturday and see how you feel about the spreads and the total. Starting with, of course, the Purdue NC State game where the Boilermakers are favored by 9. The total is 146.5. And let me just sort of ask this a different way, because you search for other ways to ask similar things. But one of them is getting back to that foul narrative with Edie. Do you think officials, because you know how gamblers can be sort of conspiracy theorists with this stuff, do you think officials go into this game cognizant of the fact that that's out there, that that narrative is out there, and it's more pronounced after the 33-11 disparity in free throws yesterday against Tennessee? And so therefore we'll bend over backwards not to get a DJ Burns into foul trouble.
I think that it is something that at least is in the back of their minds. Now, it's tough to officiate Edie because of how he plays and how big he is. But this time you've got someone like Burns who he's a big man. He's tough to move inside. And so I don't think you're going to have as many of those situations where Edie's able to get closer and closer to the basket. And then when he moves his arms up, that's when he starts to get fouled low. And that's when you're seeing those fouls called. I don't think you're going to see as tight of a whistle as you saw in that Tennessee game when we go against NC State. It's going to be something where it's impossible for those referees not to have heard it. It's such a big talking point. It's going to be all over the place. I expect you're going to see a little bit less of a favorable whistle for Purdue. Now, that being said, look, we've seen favorable whistles for Purdue all year long. It's been a problem all year for them. If you look at the fouls that Zach Edey has created versus the ones he has gotten, it's massively different. And that's what we saw in Tennessee. At one point, he created 10 fouls in that game and had yet to have a foul called on himself. It's hard to believe that's actually how things are going. At some point, you have to think he is pushing off. He's shoving a little bit as well. And he just doesn't get called for it because he's so big and he's getting hacked. But I do think it's advantage NC State here. I'm on the Wolfpack here, +9. I think that number is too big in this spot for a Purdue team that hasn't proven to me they can knock down their threes consistently. And this is a scenario where Burns may be able to play Edie man-to-man in the post. That's not something a lot of teams are able to play, dude, with Purdue.
Yeah, I'm with that. Like, I've heard people like saying after yesterday, they're like, yeah, well, it's going to be tough for NC State because of that whistle. I think they bend over backwards, like, to make sure that doesn't happen. Do you have a play on this game?
I'll take the Wolfpack +9. And I think this is one where I'm going to wait a little bit just to see what the market does. I put in a little bit of +9. I'm interested to see if this goes toward Purdue or toward NC State. I wanted a little piece in case it goes down. If it goes to 8.5, I'll fill out the unit. But I want to see if I can get 9.5 or 10 here.
Yeah, I genuinely don't understand people getting in front of the Wolfpack anymore. I don't. I've seen this happen. Now, it could be way wrong, but I would not. We'll get Mike's thoughts on UConn and Bama, some hockey, some baseball. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. What a deal this is. For real, it's a great deal. Download the app now. Use code ANG when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. Now, Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Best listeners in the game. Michael Burns, betting St. Louis in game. You're taking your life in your own hands. That bullpen is shaky. Some injuries and Marmol. Oh, no, trust me, I know. But at 4-0, it looked pretty good. Until it didn't. Trust the glove. Shh, pox on Defensive Player of the Year. Bits. I don't know. I don't know what he means by that, but we're talking about my getting angry about Wembanyama Defensive Player of the Year. By the way, Michael Montesano has been angry tweeting me about most improved player the entire show this morning. He is so angry that Jalen Williams is not the favorite for that.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. He's that. This is the NBA awards rules. Second year player. Oh.
Forrest Lehman. Sixth man thoughts with Monk out for the regular season.
We're gonna hit both those awards tomorrow.
Nas have a shot? We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah. The sixth man has been crazy. You could have had 20-1 tickets on everybody but Malik Monk over the past like 6 weeks. Nas Reed's gotten really short.
He's another one though. Like, so how did he get anointed the de facto favorite and like it's unassailable that he can't be beaten?
I think he can. Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow.
New York Mets 16. Scott Gill, maybe you need to get Defensive Player of the Year market mover involved for Wemby tickets. What's Jason Weingarten doing? Golden Bear got up early today. Senior play on Veasan. Thanks for starting the week with a nice small tennis dog. You got it. John Balducci, I had Jaeger. Thanks, Wes. Secretly rooting for Toasty though. So we'd get a Cantlay and Toasty Masters pairing.
they might be a fist fight in that matchup.
Jason McKinney, I'm loving the 1.5 lines. I think he means the run lines on baseball. Hitting parlays for extra units. That's what Jason's doing. Let's see. Brian M. What we the people of Visa need is the return of O's the Mentalist to unmask the name of the sushi place once and for all. Oh, there's an idea.
There's an idea.
Is O's not return your text anymore? What's the deal?
He's gotten pretty big. He's only doing stuff for every professional football franchise and more since we've had him on.
O's is probably like, I got Dan Marley out of that guy's head. I am quitting at the top of the mountain. Hoops by Hoots, not a chance that Burns isn't immediately in foul trouble. The NCAA has proven all year they're going to do whatever needs to happen to get their guy Edie to the finals. They had the easiest regional to start, too. People have their theories.
I didn't realize this was, I knew it was an issue. I didn't realize it was such a hot-button issue because it's totally the Shaq thing. Like,
The Shaq thing.
You don't have another player like this in college basketball. The contact barely affects him. He's that good at going up and getting it.
There was no right answer to the Shaq thing.
There's none.
There just wasn't. They'd never seen anybody like this before. Mike Somich joins us once again at Samobomb18 on Twitter from The Handle, which he does weekends here with Matt Brown. Great show, by the way. Both of them are super. There's the Samobomb. Mike, before we get back to UConn, Alabama, let's get some picks from you. You got a couple hockey plays tonight.
I do. I like, you know how I love these first period unders. We're going to go back to the well with the first period under tonight. We got a great matchup here. We've got the Kings going in to take on the Winnipeg Jets. The total sitting at 5.5. I think the game goes under, but I like the first period under even more. That's sitting up on the board at 1.5 right now. This Kings team, not overly offensive, especially on the road. And the Jets, one of the best first period under teams at home all season long. So we're going to play the under first period, 1.5, Kings and Jets. And then let's head to New York here. I still don't know why Pittsburgh's being priced the way that they are. The Penguins are not a good hockey team, yet they consistently get priced as a decent hockey team. They're a bad one. Tonight they're going in, they're taking on the Rangers. The Rangers, one of the best teams in the NHL. They're trying to lock up the President's Trophy for the most points in the regular season. I'll lay the 1.5 with the Rangers tonight at home. You can get that at +130. So give me an under in the first period, Jets, Kings, and Rangers minus a 1.5, +130 tonight on the ice.
What is that with the Penguins? Is it just Sidney Crosby muscle memory?
They're worse than people thought they were going to be going into the year. And for some reason, you haven't seen as big of an adjustment as you really should have. The Devils, another team like this, where everyone thought they were going to be better than they were, and that adjustment just never came. Because of that, you've been able to get decent prices on them, specifically the last couple of weeks. I've been against this Penguins team 4 or 5 times on the puck line, and it's been a very profitable play. Hopefully we can keep it up here. But it's odd in hockey that you just don't, it's not as big of a betting market, so you don't see as big of adjustments here when teams don't perform, because, you know, look, the books aren't worried about this hockey game. They're worried about LSU and Iowa tonight on the women's side more than they are about a hockey game, because that's going to get triple, quadruple, 10 times the handle that any game on the ice will tonight.
That is, just in case people weren't listening earlier, that is both Mike and Jay Conn very, very bullish on the Rangers laying a 1.5.
Yeah, they matched. By the way, record for most viewers for a women's college basketball game was last year's title game. 9.9 million. Be interesting to see how many today's gets. We won't quite
I'll take the over.
I'll take the over too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way ESPN's been promoting this too, I'll take the over.
By the way, do you have a play on either of the two women's semifinals, Mike? Putting you on the spot?
I do not. Okay. I've not looked at those games, so not gonna play them. I am gonna watch the LSU Iowa game, and I'm not someone who watches women's college basketball very often. So I'm gonna be one of those eyeballs that they get for it. This should be a phenomenal game, and they lucked out. They have a blank slate on Monday night to be able to have this game on TV. Everyone's going to be watching this one.
But here's the beauty of it, right? They knew to put the scheduling of those regions, right, of this particular region for the Monday after the men's Elite Eight, right? So they were clever about that as opposed to these other sports that have no idea what they're doing when it comes to scheduling. Yeah,
you got four star, what, the four biggest stars in women's college basketball playing in the two games tonight?
Beckers, Watkins, not to mention Clark and Reese tonight, and Flauje. A couple baseball plays today. We do have day baseball, but you have a couple plays tonight.
Yeah, we do have some day baseball. I'm going to a little bit later here. I'm going to go with the Reds plus 120 in the first five innings. When I'm betting baseball, I want to bet first five more than full game. A lot of times if I am playing a side, simply because I want to take as much variance out of this as possible. And when you have first five, you know the two major variables here are the pitchers. You know you're generally going to get them for five innings. If one of them gets shelled, either that's a great thing or a bad thing for you, is what it is. You're probably going to lose your full bet anyway if your pitcher gets shelled in the first five. I don't want to deal with bullpens. I don't want to deal with who is going to come in with lineup changes. I want to have the least number of variables possible. So I'm going to go to the Reds here. I'm going to back them first five plus 120. Andrew Abbott on the mound. He's a pitcher that I loved when he came up for the Reds midseason last year. He pitched very well. And then, like a lot of guys who are touted who come up, they kind of flame out toward the end of the season. That's what happened with Abbott. I think he has a good start to his season here. So I'll take the plus 120 price against the Phillies tonight.
And then I like your other one, too, because I got a March April bet on the Guardians. What do you got here?
I thought you might hear. We're going to back the Guardians on Tristan McKenzie here. We're going to lay the half run in the first five in this spot. Take a nice plus money price against the Mariners team, which they're not really hitting the ball the way I expected early in the season. You've also got a pitcher who only had three starts last year, wasn't very good in any of them. Only has a 2-1 K rate. So for me, the Guardians, the right side on this one. I'm going to take the minus a half run plus 115 in the first five here. Try and get another win for your Guardians, Gil.
My Guardians. I'm sorry, Adam Burke. They're still your Guardians. I'm just borrowing them for a month and change. All right. Last thing, Mike, by the way, Mike comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, co-host of The Handle, which he does with Matt Brown, noon Saturday and Sunday Eastern. We talked a little bit about UConn and Alabama and what Alabama has to do, but you didn't give me your thoughts on, because I didn't ask, on the spread and the total, where UConn is an 11.5-point favorite. Just absolutely dominating teams. The total's at 161.5.
I'm not sure what to do in this game. I have not bet this game, so I do have some NC State already. This one to me is a real head scratcher. Look, Bama has to get up 40 to 53s in this game if they want to compete. UConn very good defensively from a 3-point perspective. So I it feels like UConn minus 11.5 is the right side. It feels wild laying 11.5 in a Final Four game, though. So I haven't been able to get to the window on that front yet. If anything here, I like the total under 161.5. Look, you're going to have new sight lines for Alabama. They're going to be chucking a bunch of threes. You almost want to bet against them making it. And UConn, while they are very efficient, they're not very fast, which should limit the number of possessions as well. So of the four options right now, if I was going to bet anything, I'd bet the under 161.5. I lean UConn 11.5 as well, but I'm probably going to end up at the window with the under. Not sure if I'll take a side.
All right, UConn, 10 straight NCAA tourney wins by 13 or more points, longest streak of all time. They have trailed since the Sweet 16 of last year. This year in this tournament, they've only trailed for 23 seconds. If you extended back four games into last year's tournament, from the Sweet 16 on. So we're talking about eight games, 320 minutes. I started the show with this. They've trailed a grand total of 5 minutes and 50 seconds in this tournament. Did you ever think that this team was going to be that team?
No, I didn't. I mean, they lost a lot to the NBA last year, and they're better this year than they were last year. It's crazy to think that they
can
literally just refill like this and be this good after that tournament run.
Incredible. And yet, here we are. Here we are with them. Mike, always a pleasure, man. Great to see you. Great having you on Monday. Thank you.
No problem, guys. I appreciate it.
The great Mike Somich at SomoBomb18 on Twitter. Kelly and I have done all we can do. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.